You're listening to the Legion of Reason.
All right, there we go. It's the second time around. Welcome to the Legion of Reason version for March 26th, 2017. In this, the 199th episode, Feisty Twyla, Incorrigible Chris, which apparently my wife informs me I misspelled, and yours truly, the Supreme Reverend Dr. Randy Tyson, bring you another potpourri of religious absurdity and even some science. First, researchers at the University of British Columbia put another nail in the coffin of liberation therapy for multiple sclerosis. Singaporean Amos Yee is granted asylum in the United States. Oh goodness, I think I misspelled asylum too. Oh well. In Catholic Watch, forget Ghostbusters. When there's something strange in your neighborhood, who are you going to call? Exorcists. At least according to the Pope. More papal poppycock. This time Frank begs forgiveness yet again. This time not for the priestly pedophilia that went on for decades and actually centuries. But this time for the church's involvement in the Rwandan genocide. Forget the others that died in a natural disaster in Peru. The Catholic Register declares the survival of one woman a miracle. Staying with the Catholic Register, we give you their best headline of the year so far. I'm not going to say it until we come to it, because it will spoil everything. And in Islam Inquiry, I suppose a sort of news seg, for lack of a better title, Iran's Ayatollah Khamenei claims feminism is a Zionist plot. Of course it is. All those Orthodox Jews are really empowering women by refusing to sit next to them on flights. Yeah, right. In Pakistan, more atheist bloggers are arrested for blasphemy. And finally, University of Toronto professor Jordan Peterson's invited speech at McMaster University was disrupted by regressive leftists. And we all know where that we'll find that. In the regressive left files. So, how is everybody this evening? I know... Chris is waiting for her room to heat up. What about you, Twyla?
Not bad.
Not bad. Busy with the house and stuff.
Yeah, no one came to the open house today. But then the girl, she's not familiar with Red Deer. She put open house signs up where nobody goes.
Great.
Hopefully.
Oh, that's
hopefully
too bad.
We'll do this again next week.
Yeah, maybe find another realtor. Okay, so I guess we should get right into it. Now, I've got it as a one-man band. I got like 10 different things to do here. Okay, so there we go. So multiple sclerosis treatment is debunked by researchers in Canada. This is, interestingly enough, in The Guardian, UK newspaper or web news service. So these researchers at University of British Columbia, they were funded by the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Canada and did a double-blinded experiment in which they took 49 subjects and performed the vein-widening venoplasty procedure on those, whereby they insert a catheter and inflate their veins with a small balloon. And then there were 55 sham operations where only the catheter was inserted and nothing else. And so the patients and the researchers were blinded to who was in which group. So there's two groups here. And 1 year later, so this is a longitudinal study of 1 year, which is for MS, I'd like to see a little on. Maybe hopefully they're continuing to watch the subjects as we go forward. But 1 year later, they assessed the multiple sclerosis and how it had progressed using neuroimaging, and as well as looking at subjective parameters, judging their own symptoms, etc., and how they were feeling. And they showed that there was no difference between these two groups. So, surprise, there is... There are no efficacy for the so-called liberation therapy, and
still no evidence that the vein, the veins are the issue with MS, which I'm not surprised. If it's that simple, then the unfortunate thing is this therapy won't help MS at all, because MS is not a blood issue.
They were looking at the iron in the blood as being toxic. If say blood hemolyzed and released iron, it could be, it could be neurotoxic.
Still not the cause of MS.
No, it's an autoimmune disorder, and it's very difficult to see how iron would cause an autoimmune response. And it comes and goes, and this is one of the problems with studying treatments for MS, is you have to take them out quite a long ways, preferably at least 2 years, so that things regress to the mean, and so because you're up and down, it's recurring remitting, right? So it's it goes away, it comes back, goes away, it comes back. And progressively gets.
So if you try a supplement, it gets better. You might blame the supplement, but then you'll regress again. So they tried this venous therapy first on his wife, I think it was.
Yeah.
Came back with anecdotes saying, "Oh, she's much better." But with the waxing and waning of the disease, really, guys, that's why this study was needed to be done.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first, and I wish it would be the last. But I think we need to get rid of this. But apparently, there are groups out there. By the way, this was, I believe, published in The Lancet, but people are still trying, they're desperate, and people for whom the drug does, there are drugs that are very effective at treating MS, but they're not, no drug is 100% effective. So you're going to have people who are desperate. They want to become well again, meaning normal. And
so they all want this.
Yes, yeah, so they all want this.
Because he went on and on about how it was a miracle.
Yeah, it's a miracle. Yeah. Well, the thing is,
them both me.
I think this is an example of motivated reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
He has a vested interest in this. He has an emotional interest with, his wife suffering from MS, which is very unfortunate. But wishful thinking doesn't cure anything, so...
No, and this is invasive. You're putting things in veins, and you're going to increase, chance of stroke and other things. So the benefits need to outweigh the risks. And in this case, it doesn't.
Yeah, there's definitely risk associated with, a stent can slip and move. And as you noted, strokes, you can have embolic stroke, so you can have blood clots forming on these things, and they'll break off and go into the brain, block an artery, and there you go, you've got a stroke.
Yeah, stroke on top of MS is not better.
No, it's just complicating things. So I hope it'd be nice if this would finally put it to rest, but until there's an actual cure, I people would be searching for
and now something. They want to broaden this and make it for Meniere's disease and dementia disease.
Yeah, I noticed that
stroke's
too.
Stroke's gonna make that better too.
Yeah, well, they haven't even found it to be good for MS. I mean, then they're already expanding it to these other mental disorders or diseases.
So now we do need to do more studies, but the thing is, that's the only way you're going to show that risk assessment.
We saw this happen after it was discovered that ulcers were caused by a bacterium, and so a lot of people started looking for, hey, if ulcers could be caused by bacteria, maybe
not
we should
all
be looking
ulcers,
at other
ones. Though.
No, that's true. It's not all
just
ulcers,
some.
But it's common. And funny thing is, though, when they figured out what causes that. What's that disease? Neurological disease. Think Ben Hur. leprosy. There we go. I was thinking
leprosy.
Yeah. So leprosy was found to be caused by a bacillus, which is very interesting. Bacillus. Almost all of its genes for metabolism are gone. They use the metabolism of the nerve totally, and they've lost all these genes. They just disappeared out of the genome, and so it kind of fed into that kind of thing people were looking at Alzheimer's as being a bacterial disease.
I think we have some increased technology since we discovered some of these other things.
It honestly, like, we've known about bacterial infections for a long time, but it's only been matter of a few decades that we've known about ulcers and leprosy.
Yeah. In this case, well, how would widening veins help with a bacterial infection causing MS?
Oh, no, I'm just making a comparison. So it's they're worried about the iron. They're worried about the iron. So what they're saying is that the blood pools in these veins. There's not enough venal clearance.
But they already studied MS patients and haven't found that MS patients have an increased issue with their veins and
that's
iron.
True. Yeah, that's true.
They already ruled that out too.
So hopefully no more money will be wasted. Yeah. And people, but yeah, there's, until there was
they
a,
do, there's going to be people that are going to want to hurt others with this. I'm sorry to say, but it will hurt people.
Yes, it will. And there's, you know, one of the big problems is this cottage industry of surgery tourism. And, yeah, you know, you go to some place like Belize or whatever that's a little bit lax on preventing this kind of thing. And
well, and people fundraise. They'll get the whole community together for one MS guy to go get this surgery, hoping that'll be the one thing that'll, you know, cure him. And it's unfortunately A, false hope, and B, waste of money.
Yep. All right. That's one town. Okay. Here we go. Where are we now? Oh, yes. This is from Reuters. U.S. judge grants Singaporean bloggers asylum request. Here's a picture of Amos E. There. Now, Melissa Chen has been instrumental in getting Amos asylum in the U.S. And we've been, there's a secret group that I'm not going to name that we belong to on Facebook. And so we knew about this before the actual news release, but it's kind of interesting in here. Now the judge, and this is a, you know, U.S. immigration judge Samuel Cole, and he ruled that prosecution, detention, and maltreatment at the hands of the Singapore authorities constitutes persecution on account of Yi's political opinions, unquote, and called him a quote young political dissident, unquote. He went on to say, quote, the evidence presented at the hearing demonstrates Singapore's prosecution of Yi was a pretext to silence his political opinions critical of the Singapore government, unquote. Singapore had a response from the Ministry of Home Affairs. Here it is. This is very interesting. This is what they said, quote, Yi had engaged in hate speech against Christians and Muslims. The U.S. adopts a different standard and allows such hate speech under the rubric of freedom of speech. Yeesh. It is the prerogative of the U.S. to take in such people who engage in hate speech. There are many more such people around the world who deliberately engage in hate speech. And you notice how I think they got a fixation on hate speech. And who may be prosecuted. Some of them will no doubt take note of the U.S. approach and consider applying for asylum in the U.S. I hope so. Jeez.
And like, they don't engage in hate speech? What are they talking about? This is hate speech against Yi, for crying out loud. So it's pretty ironic.
Yeah, well, they have those really backwards rules that you can't offend the sensibilities of the religious. And Amos Yi took great pleasure in that. Yeah. It's great if you're religious. But nobody can say anything about anybody else's religion either. So it's kind of I don't know. It just seems to me that's the kind of thing to enhance religious tensions. You know, there's no outlet for it.
I bet you anything they say horrible things, hate speech against atheists. Acceptable.
That's okay. There's no religion to offend, right?
Right. So it's okay to, you know, throw people in jail.
And so hopefully we'll have Amos and Melissa on the podcast, and we'll talk with them about this. I know he had a rough time. He was spent quite a bit of time in detention with ICE, and it was a long time in coming. And it really was very touch and go as to whether or not he would be granted asylum, because Singapore is not, you know, a country that you would normally think of as being an oppressive state. But I think the laws that they have, the anti-blasphemy and anti-hurting religious feelings laws are rather oppressive. I don't know. What do you say, Chris?
I'm here.
There we go. Yeah. Figured you wanted to say something.
Yeah. From what I understand, it's kind of one of those situations where, how do you say it? Like, you don't have to invoke the law because the citizens themselves are putting pressure on one another, right? Threaten your neighbor, you know, you can report your neighbor for this kind of thing or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
So people just are quiet.
If you go back to I'm just going to put this up here. Lalo Dagach, posted some tweets that he saw on Twitter, obviously, of some people that, you know, these wonderful people. I'm going to name names. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to name names. Nida Ahmed said, quote, "He must be dragged." Okay. It's not me writing, obviously. "He must be dragged in the streets and then hanged."
Not hate speech.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitter. Yeah. Hey, Twitter. You've banned people for less. And of course the hashtag hang Ayaz Nizami. Oh, wait a minute. This is the wrong thing. This is the wrong story. I'm muddled in the brain.
We haven't gone to this.
Yeah, there have been a lot of tweets about Amos, and we're going to come back to that. Those tweets, by the way, that's a brain fart. Anything else you got to say on Amos's asylum granting?
I like how they're vilifying the U.S. over, you know, being humane.
easy to kick the U.S. right now. That's for sure.
Yeah, I find that kind of like okay.
After watching the debacle on Friday, we had the TV on all day, and a coworker of mine and I were watching it while we were working, and it was quite. I was just it was like the Grinch that's who stole Christmas. You know, it was just glee at all this. But anyway, should we move on? Oh yeah, okay. Well, we're gonna move on. This is a big episode of da, 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 da. Whoops, wrong one. There
it's
we go.
It's now time for the Legion of Reason's Catholic Watch.
All right, Catholic Watch. We got a big bunch of stories from Catholic Watch. This is from Yahoo News or via AFP. "The Pope tells priests to call in exorcists when needed." So if you thought this was a progressive pope, he still believes in how old is the concept of demons? I mean, making up beings that do bad things because you
instead of addressing actual issues.
Yeah. Pope Francis on Friday advised priests who hear troubled confessions from parishioners to not hesitate to call on the services of an exorcist.
Give examples of these troubles?
No, but I read a book. I've been reading a book by the King of Exorcists. He claims to have done 70,000 exorcists. And it's just amazing that you're having a bad time with relationships and money, and oh, it must be a demon because you're just having a run of bad luck. And like, oh goodness, you know. So they get exorcised, and you know, people have died because of exorcism. Said a good confessor has to be very discerning. Oh, not really. Particularly when he has to deal with, quote, real spiritual disorders, unquote. What the hell is that? Is there an encyclopedia of spiritual disorders?
Well, they're probably called like schizophrenia now and stuff, actually. And they can get actual help, but
Yeah.
Yeah, troubled confessions is a troubling phrase.
Yeah, troubled confessions, yeah.
Perhaps the police should be called in instead of an exorcist under certain circumstances.
Well, you mean the juicy confessions.
The criminal ones.
Well, yeah, but it's past crimes. They can't be, priest can't be forced to divulge. Future crime, I wonder if that's, because if a doctor is told of a future crime, they're, you know, doctor-patient confidentiality doesn't apply.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to know what it is for a priest, but let's see what gender. Yeah, it's interesting. It is not the first time the Pope has talked about exorcising demons. Ba-dum-bum. From a believer's person, they actually, it's not a colloquialism, it is an actual belief. And he generally refers more frequently than his predecessors to the devil, characterizing him as a physical presence in this world. Well, that's pretty deluded.
Physical? Do you mean like a little dude running around inside people's heads?
Yeah,
or what?
Yeah, and planting fossils and that kind of thing. Francis has described jihadists who stabbed a French priest to death as satanic, and the acts of priests who sexually abuse children as akin to participating in a satanic mass. Huh.
I say it's a crime, and you should phone the police.
Well, an exorcism is abuse. Hmm? I think exorcisms are abuse.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Vatican universities also regularly hold training courses. It must happen over a whole weekend. for would-be exorcists despite the practice being frowned upon by some church intellectuals. What do you mean some? They're not intellectuals if they actually think this is a good thing. Ugh. Anyway, that's really quite dumb. Oh, Catholic Herald. The Catholic Herald. Now, this is a little more serious. Pope Francis begs forgiveness for sins, quote, sins and failings, unquote, of church during Rwandan genocide. Now, this is something I've said before is going to be something, this is going to be the next big scandal. In 1994, there was a 100-day-long genocide where 800,000 ethnic Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed by Hutu extremists, and some of them were members of the clergy, Catholic clergy.
Mm.
Many of the victims died at the hands of priests, clergymen, and nuns. Nuns? Holy crap.
Wow.
According to some accounts by survivors, and the Rwandan government says many died in the churches where they had sought refuge.
Oh. Oh,
yeah, great. So he's begging forgiveness, and my response is, okay, hand over the criminals.
Yeah, the killers.
Hand them
who
over.
Did the killing? The Rwandan government's just asking for an apology. Why aren't they asking for names?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's coming up next from the Rwandan government. Now, and this is a step up from Pope John Paul II, you know, the sainted Pope. he refused to take blame on the church's part for what transpired in Rwanda, saying in a letter to Rwandan bishops that, quote, the church in itself cannot be held responsible for the misdeeds of its members who have acted against evangelical law. Wow, you fucker. he is a model saint. He did change his mind a little bit and make a general apology, but yeah, whatever. Kugami, not sure who he is. I can't find it in here. He says this. Quote, I don't understand why the Pope would apologize for sexual offenses, whether it is in the U.S., Ireland, or Australia, but cannot apologize for the role of the church in the genocide that happened here. Yeah, amen.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this will lead to something positive. Who knows?
Kagame is the president.
Oh, he's the president.
See the caption
Rwanda.
On
oh, okay.
the photo? Yeah.
I missed it. Yeah, there we go. Okay. And he's got to be pretty pissed. Yeah, it's the Catholic Church is just, you know, I keep saying if you.
They were also complicit with Hitler's actions, too.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't denounce
were.
It. They helped him.
There were priests that were tried as war criminals. The government of Yugoslavia, during which was complicit with Hitler's Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm. And did they not just find another mass grave of like
the nunneries for babies?
Yeah.
And the foreign minister, Louise Mushikiwabo, said repeated charges that even before 1994, Catholic institutions helped divide Rwandans and, quote, laid the intellectual foundation for genocide ideology. Today, genocide denial and trivialization continue to flourish in certain groups within the church, and genocide suspects have been shielded from justice within Catholic institutions. Where have we heard that before?
Mm-hmm. Gee, that sounds normal. These people commit genocide, then they hide from any type of punishment because they feel justified in it because they have this awful religion.
They're given safe haven.
Right? Evil.
Yeah.
It's like people with a religion are more able to justify evil actions.
Yeah, they are, right?
And then hide each other. Ugh.
And they hide each other. They give cover and safe haven. So hopefully maybe I think that the church should hand over all evidence it has of who was involved in what. All right. Oh, here we go. It's a miracle. This is from the Catholic Register. Mm-hmm. It's a miracle. Woman survives devastating mudslide in Peru.
One.
Yeah. Well, okay. So there have been a lot of heavy rains in Peru and 70,000 victims, in other words, homeless, and reports of 70 dead. So a miracle is 70 people dying and one surviving.
And
yeah,
70,
way to go.
70 people out of 70,000.
Yeah, those are pretty good odds, but yeah. Yeah. So a miracle is 70 dead, not 71. Big deal. So this woman, Evangelina, was swept away from the Peruvian forest by a mudslide that reached the Punta Hermosa resort area. South of the Peruvian capital. Yeah, I bet you. I'm wondering what happened to her husband and children. They were swept away by the mudslide when they both left their house to feed their animals in the nearby corral. Yeah. It's a miracle. I'm alive, but my family's dead.
Yeesh. Well, the husband is saying it's a miracle.
Yeah.
He said, I saw the mud carry away my wife. I didn't think I'd find her alive. God is great. It's
a
miracle.
But it's just alive. But the kids, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Well, he was in hospital too.
Yeah.
The kids apparently weren't swept away because they didn't go out to feed the animals.
Yeah. I love, there's a video on here from the New York Times. It, totally different take. In Peru, woman narrowly escapes mudslide. No miracle. Funny that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a good thing, unfortunately.
Pope Francis weighed in. He expressed his closeness to the people of Peru hard hit by the devastating rains. I'm praying for the victims and those involved in relief work.
Well, that'll help.
Send money. God.
Oh, here's my favorite from the Catholic Watch this week. From the Catholic Register. I got to do this in voice. I got to do this in voice. Oh, we're going to get the music ready. And I got to do this. Italian Archbishop ends mafia makers. Members from being godfathers. I'm going to make this archbishop an offer he can't refuse. Okay, that was a terrible...
He actually had to...
He had to... I'm muted.
Then you muted? Yeah, that's...
Very well done.
Thank you. Not really. Normally do the godfather imitation better, but that's going to have to do.
Oh, this is why he has to do this. The mafia has always taken the term godfather from the church to give its bosses an air of religious respectability, whereas in fact, the two worlds are completely incompatible. Oh, they have an issue with the mob, but not with,
the Vatican and
people that commit genocide?
They're not as far apart as you might think, because the Vatican Bank was caught laundering mafia money.
Yeah.
So you're not at that far apart.
You're trying to separate yourself from the mafia, but not from genocidal killers and child molesters. Okay.
Yeah. But hey, they don't forgive abortion providers. But the Christian Godfather.
People and molest people after they're born, but don't kill them before they're born.
She said, but the Christian Godfather must guarantee the child's education and upbringing in faith. And how can he do that if his life is in contradiction of the gospel, if it is violent and totally ruled by the God money? There is a total incompatible.
Busted.
Yeah, there is a total incompatibility here. And we've got to be clear about that. Archbishop Panisi said, Panisi sounds like a pasta. I'm hungry.
I'm taking this seriously as pasta.
Well, if you read it just ever so quickly, like I first did when I glanced at it, it looks like penis.
Oh, right. Yeah. Penisy.
I'm like, what?
Oh,
go back and read
Panisi. I think it's Panisi. Panisi. Mm. Panisi. I think a single S is pronounced. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know any Italians.
Pope Francis weighs in again. Assured his prayers for those who fight the social problems of crime and corruption, and offered his apostolic blessing. All right then.
Yeah, totally gets rid of the mafia. Like they just disappeared, didn't they?
What prompted this?
This has been going on for a while. It's been going on for years that they've been talking. Like the most notorious mafia group, the Ndrangheta. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. They were excommunicated from the church.
Ooh. And stop calling yourselves godfathers, damn it. Or else we'll cook you. What? No.
They're excitable tonight. So according to the Italian newspaper, I'm not going to pronounce, Archbishop Panisi made the decision after Giuseppe Rina, son of the notorious boss of bosses, so the real godfather, Toto Rina, was allowed to act as a godfather at the Catholic baptism of his nephew. I'd like to know what priest is going to say no.
You don't say no to the godfather.
Always going to associate godfather with mafia forever.
Well, doesn't everybody? I first read this, the first thing I thought of was the godfather. The movie.
Too bad, so sad. They don't want it.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm sorry, but being religious does not make you immune from being a violent person corrupt or involved in crime.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
Anyway, nor does it, you know, good luck erasing that meme, right?
Yeah. All right, from watching, well, this is the Islam Inquiry. This is from The Independent. Iran's supreme leader claims gender equality is Zionist plot aiming to corrupt the role of women in society. I mean, in Iran.
What is the freaking role of women in society then?
In Iran,
I think
nothing.
We know, according to
it's
him.
To disappear.
Yep.
It's to disappear in an ikat.
Not a people, not a person.
He says this. Making women a commodity and an object of gratification in the Western world. Come on. Have you read the Quran, dude? Is most likely among Zionist plots aiming to destroy society. Yuck. Today, Western thinkers and those who pursue issues such as gender equality regret the corruption which it has brought about. We do.
And working brings about the corruption? Really? I mean, women voting brings about corruption? Really?
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I guess that's part of the narrative of, you know, they're precious jewels and they must be covered and all this kind of stuff, right?
It's like,
and blame
a woman
the Jews?
Is like a piece of candy.
Blame the Jews. The Jews,
yeah. That's the easy way out, right?
What the hell?
Oh, as you were saying, Randy, before, when the Jews are the ones that he's talking about, mostly, won't even sit beside women on airplanes?
Yeah,
the Jews?
Yeah, it's really stupid. I mean, really? We're talking about the people, yeah, exactly, that say, no, I'm not going to sit beside a woman. Really empowering.
Abrahamic faith, I think Judaism is the most secular, if you look kind of overall at...
Except for the Orthodox.
We're talking about Judaism. Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, that kind of thing, but... I think that's a pretty small minority.
Well, Orthodox, I think, is just another word for taking your religion seriously. I mean, when Christians take their religion seriously, it's the same kind of crap, and same with Islam.
Yeah, it's more ritualistic, I guess so, right?
Oh, yeah.
Very highly ritualistic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was in a synagogue once for a ceremony, like, don't know what it's called, you know, where they pass the Torah around and kiss the Torah. I didn't do that, but because I'm not a Jew, obviously. But it's interesting. I understand there's comfort in ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my God, Latin in a Catholic church. Oh.
But I doubt you were shunned for not doing that by
no,
the church.
No, I was welcomed into the synagogue.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly. No. And they don't. I think it's, you know, even part of the faith as the chosen people. They don't push their religion on people.
Yeah.
Right. So that's helpful too.
The one religion I have a lot of respect for is Baha'i, because they are totally apolitical. You cannot be in politics and be on the member rolls. You have to take your name off. But, you know, once you're done, you can put your name back on the roll.
I'm really surprised he's not blaming atheists for this women's rights feminism stuff, because isn't it pretty much 100% of atheists won't be telling women to wear a hijab or a nun suit or what?
Yeah, well, we're terrorists, right? It would be a terrorist plot.
Why isn't he blaming us for this? Why is it the Jews' fault?
Yeah, I guess he didn't think of it.
You're following his logic.
Well, because that's part of the whole system of beliefs as well, right?
Part of, and... There's a lot of anti-Semitism in the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's not just a Christian thing.
Kids and,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Terrible.
It falls along the lines with that. They make a good scapegoat. They always have those
Jews.
So
do we. Yeah. We just haven't made it yet. That's our problem. We're not totally popular or infamous yet.
Well, throughout
We're trying.
Throughout time, a lot of us have been killed off.
Yeah. Pakistan and Bangladesh. Yeah. Great thing.
Yeah.
And here you come to the part that's trigger warning for me.
This is a trigger warning.
From USA Today, hijab becomes symbol of resistance, feminism in the age of Trump. Oh.
In your face, Trump. We get to bear our oppression in your face.
I do believe this is one young Muslima named Samhia. There we go. Sorry, Samia. I do believe hijabs support feminism, she said outside the Muslim Prayer Center at her school's College Park campus. The way you look at it from a religious perspective, it empowers you by strengthening your relationship with God. It's a step you are taking to further yourself within your own religion. How's that feminism again? How does that move positively in society, in a male-dominated society? It doesn't make sense. No one forced
Trump,
you to dress
so
this way.
empowering, I guess.
But Trump doesn't even get a mention.
Might get hurt.
And she said, no one forced me to dress this way, other than your religion.
Really?
But anyway. Yeah. You know what? Like I said in the Facebook post, I said, wear whatever you want, but don't try to sell me bullshit and tell me it's cacophony. Because this is bullshit. It's not empowering.
It's not feminism.
Okay. Yeah. What's the argument?
I don't know. Well, her argument makes no sense because it's all about getting close to God. And I'm like, that
no,
has
I think
not.
They said right. It. Some one. There's some line in there. It's racist and sexist to say that the hijab is not is oppressive somewhere in there.
Let's go through this then. Okay, quote, oppression means the taking away of someone's power, their agency. Okay, that's good. Yet a woman in a hijab is only covering her body and hair, not her voice and intellect. No, but she's making herself invisible. So this
if,
is a
if
somebody
you look at the top
Mugad.
Of the screen.
Top of the
sorry,
screen.
Sorry, yeah, that paragraph, just scroll back down. And this paragraph where it's quoting the person who said that. Down a little bit. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Where?
The hijab oppresses women. Okay. Dalla
Mogahed?
Okay. Dalla Mogahed, Director of Research at the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding, a nonprofit organization working to empower American Muslims, says while some countries do require hijab, quote, the hijab oppresses women's narrative is not only racist, it is also sexist, unquote. To assume a woman's hijab was forced without asking her is to presume she views Western styles as ideal, Mogahed said. Which is,
Well, it's nice that she's in a country where she can choose to wear it, but I pretty much think in her culture she would be frowned upon if she didn't wear it.
And what the hell? It's not racist.
Yeah, Islam is not a race.
Yeah, exactly.
First of all.
Jeez. Why aren't people clear on this? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. People should get that. I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah.
So Nike, of course, introduced that hijab with the swoosh.
Oh, you can now be in crowd
first,
with your swoosh.
Yeah, it's profiting on modesty fashion that is becoming a tumor that
fetish.
Is just growing.
Fetish.
It's a it's fetishizing
fetish.
Oppression.
Yeah.
It spits in the face of millions of women in the Middle East who don't have the choice, right?
Yeah, it's like, ha, look at me. Yeah.
You know what these
mind
women
you, who cares about you.
What these women want is to wear their hijab without consequence. I mean, you know, if you're not going to say anything about women being forced to wear it in places like Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, or Qatar, or whatever, you're going to get pushback. You know,
so you're turning your back on your kind, your
kind?
Ancestors, It's nice to say I have the freedom, however, you're still in the face of the people that don't have it.
I wouldn't say they're kind. They're just turning their back on women in those places.
Yeah, so I think Twyla meant like women by your
yeah,
kind.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
God damn, that was racist.
Yeah, so
I understand what
live,
you mean.
Hey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we are, so.
No, that's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
My
Can't
ancestors,
take that
they weren't forced to wear it.
No, but living in those regions, they would be. So
my ancestors covered their heads in scarves when they went out, but mostly to not get their hair wet or wind, whatever. So I don't think they were forced to wear them.
This is something that she says. If it's compulsion, it's not Islam. It's It's completely my choice, and no one has ever forced me. Yeah,
you're not Islamic.
Tell me again how you people in your culture haven't looked at you funny if you weren't wearing one.
The next paragraph.
Yeah, read it. Go ahead.
I'm going to be kind of mean. Fatima Khan, a 20-year-old studying social sciences, has worn a hijab for the last 9 years, which means she started at 11, and feels the practice has helped her focus beyond her appearance. She finds it empowering.
So quote, she's denouncing everyone who doesn't do this now. We're all focusing on our appearance, and she's not.
Well, okay.
You bunch of stooges.
So, do you really think that you're that special that if your hair is showing and, you know, maybe an arm is showing that people really give a rat's ass?
Especially here.
Do you really think you're that special that you need... I know I'm being kind of mean here, but women walk around all the time with their hair showing and, you know, with tank tops and stuff showing their arms and mini skirts and shorts, you know, summertime, whatever, people dress like that. Like,
well, she is judging.
Lots of people to look at. Why do you think people are going to zoom in on you and oppress you and, you know, like just sexualize you? And that, again, it's part of this whole narrative about, you know, the
purity,
the precious jewel that has to be hidden. And
a woman's
like
a piece of candy.
I find it to be rather an ego-inflating doctrine, I dare say.
Yeah, she feels judgmental. Better, right? Yeah. She feels she's better than us.
Yeah, she's being judgmental. She's saying, oh, look at you people. It's concentrating so much on your appearances. And look at me. I don't have to do that. I'm empowered. Like,
here's the quote. Break. By covering my body, I am able to limit how much someone can objectify me, instead have the power to only be judged for my intellect, abilities, and personality rather than simply my appearance.
Oh, we're all being judged simply on our appearance now?
Like, that's really judgmental. And like I said, what an inflated sense of ego to
denounce everyone
else.
Yeah,
she must think she's hot. And
exactly. Exactly.
She's still wearing freaking makeup.
Well, like, so many of them wear the hijab, and they've got these tight jeans, and we talked about this with Faisal, and he had a saying. I wish I could remember what it was. It was pretty funny. Hijab for Allah and something else for Ahmed or something. It was funny.
She's not focused on her freaking appearance. Why is she still wearing makeup then? God. Well, my hair's not showing, but. Oh, I'm wearing makeup, but I'm not focused on my appearance because my hair's not showing. Okay. Wow.
I accidentally found something just before we started, and it was also on USA Today, and it was a column by Farnaz Khalafi, and the title is "Hijab is Not Another Word for Freedom." Yay!
Thank you.
it's just...
That's a nice blunt second line too. Ramadan fashion collections don't signify freedom of expression. They're ways to make money. Yep.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Nike wouldn't do that unless they were going to make money out of this. Part of me wants to say, you know, it's great that women can wear sport. What is a sport? What's the difference between a sport hijab and a regular hijab?
Maybe it breathes more when you run.
I don't know.
It's a little more fitted.
It's
finding
the right
like
material.
Too, maybe, eh? It's more fitted.
You're paying for the swoosh. I mean, that's what you're paying for, I think. I don't know. Yeah,
but that's not how they don't advertise the benefit of it.
Yeah, well, it's like Q-Ray. It gives results.
Q-Ray? Is that bracelet thing?
The bracelet. Yeah.
Placebo bracelets. Yeah.
What results? Yeah, results. What
You're
results?
You're doing better.
Of course, they can't say because they're going to get. They actually have to at that point prove that they actually, you know, accomplish X. They're just being very cagey about it. So this is guy. I didn't have a chance to read this. I'm going to post this and I'll read it later. But the title, I think, just about says it all. I mean, the whole modesty fashion thing that's going on is just. Absolutely. It's modest wear. Yeah. Disgusting. Like Dolce & Gabbana and H&M, Oscar de la Renta, they're all putting out their own versions of modest wear. Yep. What the fuck?
Well, now you can prove you're rich compared to the rest of your little twerpy peoples. And look, mine has a swoosh and yours doesn't. So I'm even double better than you even. Ugh. As if that's not like being westernized.
Yeah.
Shane, please. How do you say his name?
Plaziak
is in the chat. And
Shane. Oh, Shane. Hey, Shane, how's it going, man?
Dr. Tyson is my spirit animal, he said. Are you an other kin privately, Randy?
No, but let me kill that. And just to see what he's doing. Yeah, hi, Shane. Hi, Shane.
I don't know when he joined us or anything, but I just happened to look over and
Yeah, that's good. Hey, a listener. What? Awesome.
Yay. Oh, right. Three watch.
And Dr. Tyson has a spirit animal. That's quite admirable.
Yeah, an animal. Yeah, okay. I'm not an animal. I'm a human being. Sorry.
I'm an animal. I'm a primate.
Oh, now we come to the bad part. Pakistan. Yeah, this is from. Trying to find this in a North American media outlet and forget it. This is from the Hindustan Times. Pakistan. More bloggers charged for blasphemy. There is no such thing. Radical clerics rally blocked by security forces. In other words, they're trying to lynch them. So three more bloggers have been accused of blasphemy last Friday. In an Islamabad anti-terrorism court.
Well, yeah.
Are you kidding me? They're really serious about this atheists are terrorists thing. This is just terrible.
Meanwhile, they're terrorizing atheists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the three, and this is the one I know about, is Alama Ayaz Nizami. And this is the one where people are tweeting using the hashtag Hang Ayaz Nizami. And he's had 12,000 followers online or so. Said a police official spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to give details of the cases between the three men. Okay, all three were remanded into custody of Pakistani's anti-terrorism cell. Jesus Christ. My FSM. For 7 days while their online activity is investigated. So they went in with full riot gear and they surrounded. What's this? Oh yeah, okay. This is interesting. This is where the populace is just awful. Pakistani police in full riot gear sealed off and surrounded Islamabad's Red Mosque, long seen as a refuge for Islamic militants in the Pakistani capital. Something tells me that's not the only one. And the home of a religious leader, Maulana Abdul Aziz, preventing his followers from staging their gathering to demand the death penalty for another five bloggers who were charged earlier with blasphemy. Oh, man.
Meanwhile,
pretty
that's
sick.
Not the only people that get charged with blasphemy.
Yeah, blasphemy is an easy accusation, isn't it?
Well, here, a provincial governor got shot and killed by his police guard. Who accused him of blasphemy he criticized the law and defended a Christian woman sentenced to death under blasphemy law.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet, if I remember correctly, that was the one that was accused of burning the Quran.
Oh.
And, well, nobody says she actually did it. There's, it's kangaroo courts.
Yeah. You're a Christian, you can be charged.
Yeah, this is just not something kosher, so to speak. What else we got here? Okay, we're gonna head into the regressive left files, I guess, now, huh? Yeah. Do, 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 do.
The regressive left files.
So, this past week, Jordan Peterson, University of Toronto professor, who has been warning about the being forced to, as a government employee, use the ridiculous number of pronouns that people might want to be called. Like they do in New York, where they have something like 31 different pronouns for trans people. I have no idea how that works. And he was at McMaster, invited to a debate. And it was rather raucous, shall we say. And I'm gonna find a recording of that because I actually recorded it. And it's kinda, noisy. Anytime now.
Some of the people whose voices are not being heard today are actually members of the transsexual community that have a dream of
being.
So that was, you could hear Jordan Peterson trying to speak over the din and over the this is in a room. It's not a great big room that they were in. And they had bullhorns, and this is not freedom of speech. This is a public disturbance.
I'm really disgusted by these displays.
Yeah,
it's just repulsive
too.
To see people behaving this way. And if they think it's aligning people to their cause, I don't know what the hell.
I doubt they know what Peter Jordan has ever said.
Probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got
just
something.
Just like that Peter Singer was.
Uvic.
Yeah, no nuance, no understanding. It was actual, you know, arguments and his thoughts, right?
I'm not offended. An iota. I'm offended.
Yeah, he's what? What do they call him? Anti-ableist or something like that?
Yeah, ableist. Not anti-ableist, he was an ableist.
Yes, ableist, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. I found something in CBC Hamilton. McMaster president calls for commitment to academic freedom after derailed debate. You know, they had apparently received, the university did a bunch of phone calls on both sides. Then what people wanted it canceled, which I think is just stupid. It's a debate. This is where you hash out these ideas. This is not, you know.
And learn.
It's not even just a talk where somebody's presenting a one-sided view. This is an actual debate. So they had decided to go ahead with it, and their the university president Patrick Dean he published a defense of the university's handling. I'm going to put that in quotation marks because I don't think they handled anything of a Friday debate over free speech and political correctness that was derailed by protesters. These are not protesters; these are criminals. Minor crimes to be sure, but they're still criminal. There was something, taking the opportunity to listen to a speaker, even one with whom one may vehemently disagree, is an important aspect of education and a cornerstone of academic debate. It has not, therefore, been my approach nor that of this university to intervene to shut down events, exclude speakers, or prevent discussion of issues, even where controversial topics are under discussion. So then why are you allowing these protesters, I'll put that in quotation marks, to disrupt this? Rhetorical question.
Why don't they call security and have their assets?
Yeah, it's pure, perfectly fine. You know what? He said, as such, the presence on campus of a speaker who may challenge the rights of any particular group should not be seen as undermining the university's commitment to inclusivity, I agree, but merely as an opportunity to explore and debate the topics under discussion. So again, why didn't the university act and remove these so-called protesters? So Dr. Mark Mercer, president of the Society for Academic Freedom and Scholarship, which is an organization that says it is dedicated to the... Why did they say that? That says it is dedicated. Is there some doubt? Oh, well. It's dedicated to the defense of academic freedom and respectful debate. And he called this response gravely concerning. Now, I agree with this. I agree with Dean's response. It's just that, why didn't he do anything about it? So he said, by conferring a de facto heckler's veto, this is an open invitation to protesters to shut down events through quit using big words, goddammit. Obstreperous behavior. I assume that means bad.
Obstructionism?
Obstreperous. What the hell does that mean? I've never heard that word before. Academic freedom becomes meaningless if protesters are invited to silence whichever speaker or shut down whatever events they choose. A president's defense of academic freedom has to consist of more than reciting abstract words. It must include taking action to remove those who prevent peaceful discussion from taking place. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they? I do not understand.
Yeah. It's not like they shouldn't have been aware that this might be a possibility.
Well, of course.
It ended up not being a debate because the other people that were going to participate were so terribly threatened, right, that they canceled?
Sure.
Is that not correct? Yeah.
So much for safe spaces.
Yeah.
I mean, you're making a debate where you're supposed to sit and watch and see who has better arguments. These are university students? This is the quality that they're getting.
This is our future.
This is the creme de la creme of society. It's rancid.
It is. Oh, it's terrible.
So they never got to have a discussion on freedom of speech, and it's too bad.
Reinforcing the irony.
Dr. Philippa Carter, professor of religious studies at the university, was to be the third panelist for McMaster, and Carter called the entire situation upsetting, saying, upsetting, just, that's a euphemism, saying the incident has damaged McMaster. She said, quote, it's besmirched the reputation of the university. That's what bothers me about it. No, really? Yeah. That's what bothers her about it? You know, the whole free speech thing didn't, you know, being squashed didn't bother you, but the reputation, yeah, Jesus. Anyway, it's
like the Catholic Church.
Not, yeah, it's, know, it's exactly that. Like that. It's turning Peterson into a free speech martyr. Well, you know what? Yeah, it is, which I don't think he deserves.
Yep.
Yeah, he does.
I disagree with him on many, many things. But
yes, exactly.
He's right on this one. He's right on the free speech aspect of things. And you know, it's
not only that, but he's not. He's being, his free speech is being denied him at a university, a quasi public institution. Yeah, he's a free speech martyr.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go!
Did you ever get hold of him to have him on as a guest, maybe?
I could.
Yeah, that'd be cool,
especially after this.
Yeah, I he's been on a number of podcasts, and I wouldn't mind doing that. Yeah. I still want to get Gad Sad.
Maybe we'll get some hate mail too.
Yeah.
Do you check our mail and stuff like that, Randy?
Yeah, we don't get too much.
Okay.
But I do occasionally check it. Facebook gets is the primary method of communication for us, and
we get
a lot of stuff. Hate messages on Facebook?
No, not really.
Arguments.
Okay.
Hard enough. Yeah, mostly arguments, and sometimes they're good, you know, and I like that. You know, if I'm wrong,
sometimes
I'm wrong. Yeah, sometimes you do. Some people come on holier than thou, and maybe I come off like that too. So it's kind of pot calling kettle black. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to be better.
I know. I saw your post on Facebook.
Yeah, the drunken post.
Big,
yeah,
long winded drunken response. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to go through that. You don't like me using the word evil, huh?
No, I think evil's got religious connotations.
Well, that's. I'm using it in an ironic fashion.
I know. And I use the word too, right? Like I do use the word, but it's got those, you know, I'm uncomfortable with it. Let's put it that way. I understand what people say when they mean it, but
it's hard to find a word which describes
sin, right? But I do say things like, oh, you know, wasting food is a sin, stuff like that, right? Like it's a colloquialism, but it does that religious connotation.
Sure. It's got the etymology is religious, of course.
Yeah.
But I kind of can't find a word to replace evil to express the level of heinousness of something. And heinousness doesn't work very well. And
well,
you can't say it when you're drunk.
You have to phrase together a few words to encapsulate, sure. I guess, right? Yeah, so evil is, a shorthand for a concept we can all understand. So in that sense,
there's a few words depending on the situation. It could be they're selfish, it could be they're absolutely lacking empathy, it could mean they're psychopaths and kill people, and that describes those people that, you know, are committing genocide.
But there needs to be a secular word that describes what evil does, because evil is kind of a personification of bad, of heinousness,
or like attributable to some supernatural demon or something like that.
Exactly.
Almost, right?
We need a secular word.
Something
with a. Again, I could say that they're a bunch of dicks, but you know, dicks isn't quite as the
That's
same.
Pretty mild.
Yeah, exactly.
I
don't know.
Gender neutral, Randy.
I don't care.
Although I
just don't care.
It's gender neutral.
I'm not calling someone, when I say use the term dick, when I'm calling somebody a dick, I'm not calling them a giant penis.
Okay? I know, and I'm totally kidding you, because I've
but you know, we all know somebody who gets upset when you use gender slurs. And I don't, you know, it's lost that.
That's why I'm teasing
that meaning. It's completely lost that meaning. Of course, I always loved using the term pussy, because that people always think that that's the vulgar colloquialism for a vagina, but it's not. It doesn't come from that at all. It's actually, it comes from the word pusillanimous.
Yes, and?
Yeah.
Meaning
so it,
when?
It has a... it means
what,
pussy.
What is, like cat?
Pusillanimous. No. You know, it comes from the word pusillanimous.
Well, and
what does that mean?
That's what pussy comes from. It, well, it means pussy. Like, is it
means wimp?
Vagina?
A wimp. No, a wimp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a wimp.
Okay.
So I love using that one because people always assume that it comes from the vulgar terminology for a vagina. And that's not true.
Yeah.
And I can just go, aha!
They stole gotcha. It to cover vagina.
Yeah. I think that comes from cat.
Yeah.
No.
But
pussy.
Then, yeah. I think it's interesting how...
I need a drink.
Yeah, especially with what I'm about to say. I think it's very interesting how the uptake of the word cunt in the past, say, decade or so, right? Like, I know that I was super offended by that word, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
North Americans now, generally are. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a North American
thing. As I've been, you know, exposed to more, and I knew that it was, you know, it wasn't offensive in other places, but, you know, like, I don't know, listening to YouTube and seeing people's Facebook, this kind of thing, like being kind of, I guess, getting more exposure to the word in context from other areas, it's become a whole lot less offensive to me, right?
Well, yeah, you listen to Bering, you're going to get desensitized quickly.
Other people too, right? Yeah.
But, you know, places like Australia or Britain, I assume New Zealand, the word cunt is used all the time and used as a, you know, hey, how's it going, cunt? You know,
yeah,
in a friendly way.
Jim
or
Jeffries? Jim Jeffries that did a bit about that?
A comedy
bit about it? Okay.
I think you're thinking of the word fuck.
No, because I remember...
Okay.
I think it was Jim Jeffries. Is that... Am I getting it right? Jim Jeffries?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Right?
No,
he's
no
idea. Hey, how's it going? You cunt? How you... You know, talking about how people use it in England. Just so you know, like you just walk up to your buddy and, you know, it means nothing, right?
Well, there's a really. Have you heard the Monty Python study of? Apparently Shane says it is Jim Jeffries.
Okay, thank you, Shane.
Monty Python did a thing on the word fuck, and it's really good because it goes through all the uses of the word fuck, and it's really quite funny.
I strongly. There's a kind of like a. He looks like a very wise, I don't know, maybe Hindu kind of sage or whatever, right? And he goes through this whole, you know, uses of the word fuck, and it's hilarious.
Yeah,
have you ever seen that one?
No, I haven't. But...
Okay, I'll post it to the page or something. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Anybody got something to say here? Because we're kind of done, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess that's a... No, here. I just watch a tumbleweed just go by.
Oh.
crickets. Do I have crickets on here? Crickets?
Yeah. Maybe.
Oh, I don't. I don't have crickets on the soundboard. Oh, well.
What's this? You're a white male. Play that.
You're fucking a white male! You're a white man!
There you go. Okay. That's what I think of that white male business. You know, I was interviewed by Corey Johnston. He's another podcaster in Saskatchewan, and he's much more into social justice than I am. That's the diplomatic way to put it. And you know, I like this project. He's doing a project on. He's interviewing people who are pro social justice, and then people who are anti. Social justice, though I wouldn't consider myself anti-social justice. I'm neutral, just that I have opinions on issues.
And I'm anti-bullshit.
Exactly. It really depends on the issue. And, you know, one of the things I brought up was the trigger warnings thing and how harmful it actually is. I think that social justice movement is so lacking in skepticism that even skeptics that align themselves in the social justice movement throw skepticism out the window. And I gave examples. One of the ones we've talked about before is the earnings gap between black men and white men. And they, people use that as evidence of racism, but that's a logic fallacy. That's affirming the consequence. You know, it might be true, as we said previously, it might be true, but you haven't shown it, right? And it's not my job to do the homework for people. And, you know, because I also gave a counterexample in that Asian men make 118% of what white men do, what white men earn. Now, is that racism? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's how you frame the question and interpret the data and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's
the,
yeah. I mean, there's a lot of factors that
social
go into these things. It's a course. Yeah. Well, it's a very coarse measure of anything. You can't extract anything from it. It's just too coarse.
Well, I mean, you can. There are things, you know,
like what?
Like for example, I was listening to a piece by Gad Sajidi, and he was talking about you know, because he's into evolutionary psychology and how it pertains to advertising. And he was talking about sort of this universal ideal mate that both men and women seek out. And it does seem to be like, you know, common to, you know, cultures kind of thing, right?
Any it's a mix.
Study there's been.
Yeah, it's a mix of evolutionary biology and culture.
Yeah, but, you know, the evolutionary biology explanation is also robust, let's put it that way.
Well,
and there's been
robust.
a fair number of studies to say that there's, you know, certain biological characteristics that we look for in a potential mate,
mm-hmm.
you know, or there's certain characteristics that we look for in a potential mate that are based on evolutionary biology, right?
And how you figure that out is that it's cross-cultural and cross-temporal.
So yes, but in order to get at that answer, you did social sciences to arrive at that. No one single study, I think, would be robust enough to make a solid claim, but you get a compilation of studies like that, and you know, it becomes a more plausible explanation. You know, again, competing with the cultural versus biological imperatives that drive, you know, mating, I suppose, seeking out mating preferences or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not a... and of course there's always I don't want to say anomalies, but you know, like obviously
there's
there are
exceptions.
People who are gay that wouldn't be seeking out the same, you know, right? Yeah. In a mate that, you know, a heterosexual person would. So there's social sciences aren't like predictable in the same way that astronomy is predictable. So the methodologies are quite different, obviously, right?
Sure.
So you know, it comes down to data analysis, interpretation, how you frame the question. You know, repeatability, hopefully.
Well, some of it is experimental.
Oh, yeah,
a lot,
sure.
Fair bit of it. Yeah. Evolutionary, especially.
Well, some people would even, you know, like dismiss it as just so stories, right?
Yeah, a lot of people do that because, oh, well, that's just a just so story and it's bullshit. That's not true.
Yeah. No, I agree.
It's testable.
Some of it is just so stories. Some of it is bullshit.
Some of that in biology is just so stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just looking at why does a mimosa, you know, you ever seen these touch me not plants? They're a weed in most parts of the world, but in Canada, you have to actually buy them.
Mimosa.
It's a little plant with little leaves, and you touch it and the leaves fold. It's very touch sensitive.
Think of mimosa, I think of a drink served at girls.
Yeah, I know.
The slushy and orange juice.
But it's an actual plant. Nobody knows why for sure it does it. I mean, people say, well, it must be a defensive mechanism, but how do you test that? I mean, that's a just so story if you can't test it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to speculate. It's a hypothesis, but it's not testable.
Yeah.
Yet. But
exactly. That's
maybe the salt in our sweat or something on our fingers. I don't know.
No, it actually shrinks the cells. It's all hydraulic inside the plant. It pulls the water from the cells, and the cells shrink, and they lose the leaves lose their rigidity, and they fold.
Well, there will be a natural explanation for
that. So no one can find the chemical reaction to that.
It's not the mechanism is known, but why do they do it to begin with? What's the purpose behind that? What's the adaptation? Maybe it isn't an adaptation. Maybe to say there is an adaptation is adaptationist. Who knows? And I find that happens too often. Yeah, that's a adaptationist is that is a someone who believes that every characteristic in an organism has an adaptation is an adaptation, which is not necessarily true.
Like a finer.
See, like
a finer. I guess.
Do you sneeze when you look at the sun?
I don't.
Okay, I do.
I don't look at the sun for one thing. That's a bad idea.
Well, okay, looking at a bright light. Look at again. Do you sneeze when you look at a bright light?
It's probably a good idea because as a kid, I didn't know better, so I looked at it until I couldn't see anymore, and that probably damaged my eyes. So if I was sneezing because of it, maybe I would have stopped.
Yeah, maybe, but then again, how do you test that? Because
also I have really bad eyesight, so it probably enabled me to do it.
If you want to prevent a sneeze, tickle the roof of your mouth with your tongue.
Why would you want to prevent a sneeze?
Because one might have their jaw wired shut for orthodontal purposes when they're 15 years old, for example. Oh,
okay, but it's just so satisfying to sneeze.
Or if you get your appendix out, or if you've had a C-section, or any type of abdominal surgery.
Really. Yeah.
One of the best things in life is the relief that comes with a sneeze. And one of the most frustrating things that happens is when you want to sneeze, and you really want to sneeze bad, and then all of a sudden you can't.
Isn't that
terrible? It's the one with allergies who sneezes and sneezes and sneezes and gets sick of it. Ugh.
But an unsatisfied sneeze is not good.
Yeah, that's a form of torture.
None of my sneezes are satisfying because I'm still all stuffed up after.
It's right there with waterboarding.
Hurts. Yeah. When you sneeze, when your sinuses hurt, it hurts.
Tickle the roof of your mouth with your tongue. Try it.
And on that note, I guess, thanks for that tip there, Chris.
You're welcome.
Next time I get abdominal surgery, I'll try that.
All right. I think we should leave it here and get ready to go to bed. Tomorrow's another day in the salt mines.
and watching the news.
Say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody. Thanks, to be literal.
You've been listening to The Legion of Reason, coming to you from Calgary, Canada. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please consider reviewing us on iTunes. Music was provided by Dean Morrison and Graham Hill and used with permission.